Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello. This week, I'm going to treat you, as I sometimes do, to a past edition of Desert Island Crisps, the format from my radio show in which I take a famous celebrity, strand them on a desert island, and invite them to share the stories of their life with me that revolve around food, and we chow down on usually 8 items from their gustatory past. The one I've chosen to dig out for your delectation involves me and Sue Perkins, my screen wife, or one of my screen wives, with whom I never had a row and thus always worked harmoniously. We met towards the end of last year at my kitchen table in North London, fully socially distanced, and had a wonderful time.
Hello, champ. How are you?
I'm very well. I haven't done a sort of the roster of your achievements over the years because I couldn't in front of you list all the things because basically it supersizes.
That's it. The career began and peaked and then ended with dressing up Fandango, which people still, I don't know, it sort of seems to be a high watermark, not of comedy or certainly content, but of just permissiveness in terms of alcohol. I think that's what people love, is that we just didn't care.
No.
At all.
The clip that goes around is the cocktail trolley. The falling over, the mixing of the... I think we mixed a couple of the drinks in your mouth.
Yes, and then you fired a soda siphon at me it's a very high pressurised siphon. And then I think we collapsed and a bottle of Cinzano goes. But I remember the build-up to that more than I remember filming the scene, which was the pair was just pleading with the director at around about 1 o'clock, going, what's in for this afternoon? And he was sort of saying, oh, it's a cocktail thing. And both of us had been drunk the night before, going, please don't make us do it. And we were really grumpy about having to do it, but within 5 seconds, it was like...
It was...
Reignited.
Was it the Len Deighton or cocktail book or the Esquire cocktail book?
So the one... So that was just...
There's two things. There's the 70s cocktail scene. That one when I fall over the trolley.
That's in The Good Life. Do. So that's when I'm dressed as Margot Ledbetter. And so that was in a sort of spin-off thing that we did. So the Len Deighton Action Cookbook was when we did Supersize of the 70s. And that's the one where he writes that you should allow half a bottle of spirits per guest per half hour, increasing to a bottle after the first hour. And that's what we did. And we nearly died.
By series two, we were saying, we'd look at the thing, it would say 8 a.m. call time, 8:30, Giles and Sue mix cocktails. And we'd go, why don't you put the cocktail scene in the afternoon, eh? You make it the last thing, at least.
But then, if it wasn't cocktails, then we're looking at sort of earlier periods in history, and it would be beer for breakfast. It would be small beer for breakfast. So my memory of that is going to see a doctor on a Monday morning for some spurious sort of format point, and he'd say, yes, your liver function is great. And then sort of 10 minutes later, you'd be in a dungeon with a chef having a sort of very weird sort of beef tart with 16 pints. And everyone was super surprised at the end of the 10-day experiment that the liver was fatty and we weren't very well.
Yeah.
And I remember at the end of it that you came away from it with a couple of syndromes.
I don't think it's to do with drinking insofar as in some ways everything is, but...
And they gave you gout at one point.
Yeah. Yeah.
You had gout at the end of one of them.
Sorry, that noise is one of the cats in the litter box, rustling about.
Yes, I can just see him sort of, mid-coil.
That would mostly be a wee, I'm sure. Is it not?
Not from what I'm seeing, but it's all good.
I'll go and fling it out into the compost.
So, yeah, you had a syndrome and gout, and I had, I mean, they diagnosed my brain lump. I mean, that was what was so
God.
Good.
Now, wait a minute. This is where I start wondering if we should go back to the beginning of your life and work through. But you said that, I mean, yes, they diagnosed your...
Yeah, pituitary tumour, all benign, obviously. The subject of many a headline, albeit in vain, really, because it's very easily manageable. But, yeah, I just remember going in. It was Victorian week. They did a hormone profile. I never had one before. Didn't need to. I was like 37 or something and absolutely living what I now understand to be my best life, as age has withered me. And they just took me to one side and said, oh, by the way, you've got a brain tumour. It was like, oh, I don't have time for that because I've got a cocktail sequence. So I'm just going to get on, just try and blank that. Yeah.
So when you fall over the cocktail trolley, it's not the booze, it's a tennis ball pushing on your hippocampus.
Sort of pushing on my optic nerve. But that was all fine and sorted out. And I'm very sort of grateful for it in a weird way. But yeah, people like it because it was the golden age of just pushing what you can show on telly, and now we'd never get away with any of it. We just wouldn't.
No, I think when I think back to the Roman one, I remember when we went to Rome and we walked around sort of the outside of the Colosseum dressed in our clothes and we ate, well, we didn't eat the mice, but they served us the mice and everything. But I spent a couple of days happily being a slave. Hmm. Well, not happily, but I mean, it was like, he would look at that and I don't know if you'd necessarily...
No.
...make that, but that's what ancient Rome was.
Yes, exactly. Built on the back of slaves, as every civilization was. Yes, I think probably now there would be numerous red flags. In fact, there'd be red flags all over it. But you're right. It was a really beautiful, fun bridging moment in life where you get to do something different and new and experimental. And you're right. It sort of changed things up massively for both of us. And now I go to India and to sort of rural India where there's no sanitation, and you go to a 6-star hotel.
I know that off camera you're staying in 6-star hotels.
Yeah, you try and find one in Uttar Pradesh. I defy you.
Well, look, we've leapt right to the end of, not the end of your career.
So that was
me and Sue talking about the Supersizers, which is the series that we did in God. I mean, I know it was 07 because we started, because that's where the year my dad died, and that's how I measure these things.
Oh no!
Yeah, you know, we started 10 days after my dad died with
I
the Jacobean
that,
one.
Yeah.
So God. Anyway, that's not about me. It's about you. We had a great time. We did those two series. We did our Good Life mock-up 2007, 2008, 2009. I think it came to an end with our royal wedding one, which displeased the BBC. No, Sue isn't dressing up as Kate. Giles isn't dressing
Why
up
Why has
as
Sue free. Pretended she's pregnant? This up, is a national disgrace.
Up and down the Mall in a horse-drawn carriage. But anyway, so and from that career, my TV career, basically, has been sliding downhill ever since. Sue's gone from strength to strength, and it's all basically about travel and huge Asian rivers and stuff now. But let's go back and do this Desert Island Crisps thing, where you're on a desert island. We're going to give you 8 things to eat.
Yes.
You've provided a list of 7, which is, I'm very abstemious of you. We'll come to an 8th one at some...
Don't want to be greedy.
Well, I'm definitely going to grab an 8th one out of you at some point. I have them. I have your things here. Now, we're going to try and tell the story of your life.
Yeah.
The first thing that... I know that Croydon is... I mean, I've read your autobiography, Spectacles. We talked about it all the time anyway, when drunk.
Croydon's like a punchline for people, and it's sort of probably for me in more self-effacing times was too. But yes,
that's where you begin.
I begin in Peckham, actually. I begin my first 6 months in Peckham, born in East Dulwich General. And then we go up in the world to Croydon. I know you find it difficult to imagine that Croydon is a pinnacle, but for me, very much so. I arrive at this sort of concrete nirvana, age 6 months. And Croydon was always, and remains so, because Luna House is based in Croydon, which is an immigration sort of centre, was that we had all the different waves of immigration represented across the school. So you'd have the sort of second generation, third generation Irish families, second or first generation sort of Pakistani Indian families, and Vietnamese. So, you know, obviously I was a kid in the sort of mid-70s, late 70s.
Yep.
And I remember... Kim, this Vietnamese kid, coming in, who spoke no English, and we started eating Vietnamese food. She brought in Vietnamese food, so I'd have this sort of burst of colour in my sort of quite dull sort of food landscape.
What was the school food like aside from
dreadful?
That?
Apart from the only thing I remember, and I don't think I'm alone in this, would be those enormous tray bakes, so sort of a metre long of sort of chocolate sponge and chocolate custard. Chocolate custard never made with milk, so that sort of thin, watery texture, but was bangingly sweet and would give you a migraine. And I would just queue until the ends of the earth for that. I loved that. Was my favourite. Maybe I'll put that in because we're owing one.
Well, look,
chocolate,
do you know,
sponge with chocolate custard.
That would be great because, I mean, the next thing looks like it comes a bit later. So can we let's say that's your first thing, yeah, the chocolate sponge. Unless you want to take Kim's Vietnamese food, which would make you, there'd be a bit more, you know, cosmopolitan. But you've got some of that coming up later.
Yeah. And I don't think I really knew it as Vietnamese food. I didn't even, do you know what I mean? I didn't think of it in those terms. I just thought, God, this is something different from what was I eating at the time? A lot of mince and potatoes. So at home, my mum was a good, solid cook. And was it particularly good at kind of make do and mend and use everything up and, you know, good, solid principles of home economy, mm-hmm, due to there not being a lot of cash around. So I just think I'd never had spice before. I'd never had... But you're right, let's not put that in there because we'll come to that. Let's go with a catering classic, a stalwart, a metre long, metre wide... chocolate sponge, and catering chocolate sponge.
Exactly. My recollections of those is that they weren't really chocolate brown. They were sort of, yeah, paler than that.
Yeah.
Very slightly mauve, or it was,
yeah,
not...
Whatever petrochemical had been poured into it, it gave it a sort of... Yes, it wasn't deep cocoa, was it?
There wasn't. It wasn't lint 70% or 85%. No. It was there cocoa. The colour came from something else.
Yes, it was additives, wasn't it? It was just... It was probably in a premix bag... poured like sort of blue circle cement into a tray and then mixed with water. But I just loved it. And all of my early food choices are about sugar.
Whereas by the time we were doing supersizes together, you were sort of trying to be healthy. The show made it very difficult for you. You were a vegetarian, although you used to...
Broad, yes.
But you would take one for the team if someone had,
yes,
to. And in the end, you were the one that bit the heads off things and really showed me up. Have you always been eschewed meat?
I've never been that into meat. I think it's... Now I'm properly vegetarian, and I do so because I just think it makes sense in terms of the planet and my own personal, you know, ethics,
but not vegan? Or...
I'm a bad vegan. I do a lot of vegan stuff, but I have honey, and, you know, it's bad vegan. And occasionally an egg, if I can't think of how to get protein. Lots of vegans will be angry about that, but actually if you eat a lot of vegan food, you get tired of endlessly soaked cashews.
I think the vegans don't mind as well, you don't claim to be a vegan.
Yeah, I think the thing is I just think people have to respond to their own morality and their own taste, you know, and it becomes very tribal eating. And I just want to disconnect from that. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm going to try and eat what I think is sustainable and good and tasty. And I'm not going to judge anyone for their food choices. If I'm overtly seeing somebody enjoying food that's come from animal cruelty, I'll probably get involved. But other than that, just do what works. And also, everyone's sort of... biochemistry is different. Everyone's bodies are different. Some people feel they need certain things. Mm-hmm. What I feel I really need is vegetables. I've always liked vegetables. And I think with supersizes, it was like, I was living with a vegetarian at the time. We didn't eat meat, but I hadn't made that definitive link between eating meat's not a good idea for what I think about the planet, etc., etc. So I was happy to bite, you know, I chewed on a pig's tail and a pig's ass and some nostrils, and I had duck tongues, and, you know, we had leaky spinal cord bread and butter pudding, and we did everything, didn't we?
The leaky spinal cord bread and butter pudding, which they would have probably described as bone marrow bread and butter pudding, but equally people would be disgusted where instead of butter, it was... I mean, to me, that's one of the... That's a thing that I've eaten when restaurant critics sit around saying, I've eaten... this one knocks them dead every time.
Yeah,
thought it was delicious. Although the way... Later when one went back to the pan and saw the way that the fat had congealed basically back into a cow, like solid.
Yeah.
It was quite
carvable, wasn't it?
But you... To go through life as a vegetarian, sort of almost vegan, bad vegan, you feel... You can... You know, people can't say, but you haven't tried the good stuff because you have eaten everything now.
I genuinely think that apart from you, you know, and maybe Jay, I could sit down with a lot of food critics and match them in terms of what I've gone for. And if I go away and stuff, I'll always try the local food. Up until a point where I committed to vegetarianism, I would always say, yeah, whatever's going, as long as it's not dog or it hasn't been electrocuted or horribly massacred. There's a mate of mine, Ollie, who's a sound recordist, who goes on a lot of my travels, and he plays a game with his mates, and they order for you. So one person will order for the rest of the group, and they're not allowed a choice. And he once got served a microwave toad, and I really think that's the line that I wouldn't cross.
Look, Mickey, we're back to now to your part of your life, and that you were in Croydon and that kind of thing. Listen, you've got... I noticed next on your list, I see Viscount biscuits.
Now you must know what a Viscount biscuit is. Are you too posh for a Viscount?
I've played fives with one or two Viscounts, but I don't know about... No, I'm not that posh, but I'm not sure... Oh, Ben's not posh, and he's from Stratford, and he hadn't heard of a Viscount, but he's young. He's like probably 27
He's
or
literally like
some
Titian little baby. He's like a sort of tiny man child. He's barely, he's fetal in his magnificence. Viscount biscuits were, for me, an almost unattainably posh comestible, and they would come out high days and holidays. Usually, if you were lucky, you'd get a penguin. You'd get a six-pack of penguins. That sort of, again, that sort of mid-brown, pallid thing. And they would had different colour wrappers, but they all tasted the same. Yeah. So there was this sort of illusion that that the red might mean a strawberry or a blue, or the blue would mean a blueberry. But no, they were all the same. But a Viscount, individually wrapped, green and silver foil, which when unwrapped revealed a disc of sort of chocolate ganache, I suppose you'd call it. And you bit in and there'd be a mint filling.
Yeah.
I can taste it now. It's that sort of dribble response has been kicked in. And they'd be just that's the prize.
Are they around now? Because I think you looked, didn't you, Ben, and you couldn't find them.
I think probably they've been banned. I mean, like most of the food of our childhood in the '70s, they contained sort of things that aren't really available and allowed now.
Yeah,
I think, you know, they're mass produced and under. In laboratories, I think. I don't think any natural.
When they took the tartrazine out of Kiora, I lost interest. If it doesn't glow in the dark, you can't drink it.
No, exactly. But I used to come home from school and I don't know what you did, but I would regularly eat half a loaf of Nimble Bread with jam.
Nimble Bread, which, yes, I remember the Nimble Bread around, but I mean, but that was low calorie bread or something, wasn't it?
I don't know what it was, but you could basically take a loaf and crush it in one hand down to the size of a sort of almost pea. Mm-hmm. It was a bit of yeast and a lot of hot air.
And crush it down to the size of a pea and then it would spring up again.
Slowly, yes, sort of reform. I mean, it was awful.
Well, look, we can eat some because the next thing on your list, which was the second but is now the third, now that we've taken as the first one, the insipid chocolate roll and the Viscount biscuits, you've written white bread under the grill with sugar and cinnamon. And I've got some white bread, and then we could. I mean, you don't have to eat it, but it's always quite good when we sort of actually cook and have these things. Now you call it poor man's French toast.
Yeah.
The only other thing is, Kitty, literally, my daughter had French toast this morning, and there's some egg left over. I could make French toast, but you don't really eat egg.
No, I eat egg. I'm bad vegan.
So
I just don't eat
French toast as well.
Yeah, why not?
A rich man French toast.
We can compare. So this is something that my mum did. So it is. On the grill, pappy white bread, grill it one side. So it's a mid golden.
I'm not making toast then.
No, you can grill. Oh yeah, you've got a grill. I don't even have
a
grill anymore.
You grill the sugar and the cinnamon.
So you do one side just normal grill.
Yeah.
And then you flip it over. On the other side, you put a mix of a bit of brown sugar and cinnamon and a bit of butter.
A bit of butter?
So what I would do is mix up a little bit of sugar and cinnamon and then dot a bit of butter.
I had Kelsey Winkleman criticising my buttering the other day. She liked Marmite on toast. And she was like, no. She was furious because the toast was too toasted or had gone a bit cold.
Oh, no, I like a good colour on toast. Yeah, just do whatever. Just do...
Just dot it or spread it?
A little bit. Spread it, might as well. Spread a little bit. Not too much. Because you want the cinnamon and the sugar to be the... And then you want to melt the sugar.
Okay. I'm
going to
put a bit of this on
As a caveat, I need to say I haven't eaten this since I was about 10, so it could be absolutely disgusting.
That'd
be all right.
Is it okay? Is that the sort of...
No, that's burnt, but let's go for it. Come on, let's just eat it. It's all good. Yeah, that's really burnt.
How would it not be...
How would it not be burnt? It would not be burnt if you hadn't burnt it.
Oh, that hasn't worked, has it?
But you know what? Sometimes you have to go back and you have to just face down the fact that the food you ate was just awful.
Have a bit of that, a bit of the actual French toast with some cinnamon. Oh, just yeah. That might be better.
This is what you were eating while I was eating. Yeah, that's good.
That's better.
Mm. You made it right. You made it right.
But the next thing after the chocolate cake... The Viscount biscuits, the white bread under the grill, which we come up to crumpets. Now, I've got some crumpets, so I mean...
Let's get the crumpets on.
Okay.
Right, this Marmite, no butter.
When in your life are we talking about?
I don't know what this is. I recently got this, probably it's no surprise, diagnosed with sort of suspected ADD. And I, for me,
in the crumpet packet, could you?
Oh God, what's the learned helplessness that you that's come over you?
Well, it's quite a tough packet.
Ooh, I'm not. Do you know what? Annoying. I was hoping I could open that in one go and just stab at that. There you go.
Who knew? That's some useful sound effects. They can use that for the archers and stuff. We've got really good packet.
Foley, yeah.
Go on.
I'm
going to put them in the toaster. Is that correct?
Yeah, perfect. Quite a good colour on them. Don't insult me with a sort of pale crumpet.
I've already insulted you with a dark cinnamon.
You burnt my mother's favourite recipe. Just destroyed her culinary reputation. Crumpets. I went through a phase as a student of eating crumpets, and I remember that being hangover food. Crumpets were hangover food, but also something that rooted me to childhood. So cheap, sugary, white, carby-based nonsense. But Cambridge was the place where I first tried an avocado. Right. Never had an avocado before I went to university. I'd never had a sun-dried tomato. I'd never had Chinese food. This is where you and I differ, I think. I think because I know you had a much more of a sort of metropolitan kind of...
I would have been one of those terrible people at... Well, I mean, I wasn't at Cambridge, but at university, who was going, never had an avocado. Look at Perkins, you've never had an avocado. I mean, sort of thing. God,
I'd have been horribly bullied by you and hated you.
No, I'd have been fallen in love.
Yeah, true. I remember my mate Nicola, her dad took us out for Chinese and I had my first crispy duck and pancakes. And I thought, like, this is a brave new world. This is an extraordinary... Ben's actually gone into a coma listening to this. Ben's sort of... He's powered down.
So your first Chinese, and what do you have? You had crispy duck?
Crispy duck. Sweet and sour pork, obviously. Mm. Obviously, I mean. You've got to try it. And then I had the crispy seaweed, which I remain obsessed with.
Yeah. Which, with always, it's not seaweed, you know, they used to say.
Yeah. I didn't care what it was. It was salty.
It's basically kale. It was so good. Why, you haven't put that on there, have you?
Well, I should have done.
Oh, we weren't allowed to talk about it without again. You know, you're... It's extraordinary. I mean, the ones that are coming next are going to make the crumpets and the white bread toast look like the healthy option.
But this is just all... But yeah, I eat a lot of good food and I'm a pretty good cook and I'm super healthy. But these, you...
A bit more. These are... The crumpets a bit more.
Yeah. Have you got any Marmite?
Yes.
Has everyone else chosen really posh food?
No.
Like, did Rob Brinder sort of say, oh, you know, I'm...
You get caviar. Rob wants a caviar.
Oh, God.
Zahn had a pucker pie.
Oh, God, yeah. You want to just... No butter on mine. No, I'm taking Marmite. You have butter on yours.
Okay. You're going to have just Marmite?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to go old school.
Is that old school?
Yeah, for me, yeah. I never liked... I just like the
I let
Marmite.
You do your
yeah,
Marmite?
Come on. Let me
I'm
do the Marmite.
I'm going to give myself a little...
Oh, lovely.
I would probably have had jam.
I'm surprised you haven't quinelled that Marmite. Hard to quinell. Hard to quinell.
You're going to have just Marmite on there. And do you need a knife this week?
Yeah, I do love a crumpet. I bet you don't allow yourself crumpets these days. Your body being
nah,
a temple.
No, not really. Body's a temple.
Oh. She's a reassuring crunch.
Mmm.
Crumpets are cheap. They connect you to home and family. And I was a student. And occasionally I'd go out and have these amazing meals. And, you know, I just, you know, go to a... Trattoria, or you go to a... I don't know, even a pizza was like... I don't know, I can't tell you how narrow and restrictive my food world was until I left home. That's not to say my mum wasn't a good cook, but it was just a very narrow bandwidth of sort of meals and cuisines. And I have experimented hugely, but I always come back to a crumpet. Always. When I'm sad, I have a crumpet.
Really? So there is definitely... No, you are self-medicating with your food.
Without question. If I feel low, I'll go and buy a pack of crumpets. And I am lucky I don't feel low that often. Otherwise, I'd be even porkier than I am. But it's blissful. It's a blissful food stuff.
We'll be back with more Desert Island Crisps after a short interlude. To get more from The Times, why not treat yourself to a subscription and we will give you the first month free. Just search thetimes.co.uk/Giles Corran has no idea.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I feel like I was watching, it was first of all Light Lunch and then became Late Lunch.
Yeah, so we'd done bits and bobs for French and Saunders. We wrote for them in sort of 95, 96.
How come? Was it Footlights? Was it Thing?
No, we'd done a... we were doing sort of sketch comedy, which wasn't hugely in vogue at the time, but just on the tail end of us doing sketch comedy in Edinburgh, you start to see brilliant acts like League of Gentlemen and Matt Lucas and David Williams were starting to pair up, and Zander was doing stuff. There was suddenly a sort of resurgence.
And you and Mel went to Edinburgh?
Yeah, we went to Edinburgh every single year. We would ply our rather limited wares there and see what happened. But we did some sort of... characters that were Canadian post-feminists who were just sort of so radical that actually they sort of became the very thing that they feared. They were sort of repulsively misogynistic and narrow and awful. But anyway, the Mariella Frostrup show, little picture show, I think it was called, used to do movie reviews. And they asked us if we'd basically review a wedding sort of movie, a Hollywood schmaltzy wedding movie, as these characters. So we got in full wedding gear and then did this ludicrous sort of sketch. And Jennifer Saunders watched it. And she watched it and thought, something about those guys, I don't know, I want to sort of see what they're at. So I got a call, no mobiles in those days, not a landline call from Edison. Who's it? They said, it's Jennifer Saunders. And I went, oh, I can't say what I said because this is a radio station with sort of decorum. But I swore a lot and said, that's the worst impression I've ever heard. And I thought it was my mate Sarah Phelps doing a bad impression of Jennifer. And then Mel phoned me about 10 minutes later saying I've just had Jennifer Saunders on the phone. And I realised that I'd put the phone down on this sort of iconic human. And then we started hanging out with them a bit and wrote for them. And they always just mentored us. And they were very generous, and they remain very generous with their time and support of young female talent, actually. And I remember gigging, and Dawn would always turn up, or Jennifer would always turn up, and they would buy a ticket and sit in the back of the stalls, and they'd come and see you afterwards and say, well done. And they were just very important people in my emotional and career landscape.
And let's very briefly look, while you mention it, and we've never talked about this, but when you talk about very supportive of young female comics, just in the papers today, there's stuff about comedy clubs and expectations of women, how women ought to be treated in comedy clubs, and new regular things. It's a very masculine environment. The notion of toxic masculinity was not coined then. It was before all the panel shows and everything. There's lots of issues, aren't there? There's the panel shows and the male voices and the difficulty. And there's the sort of the Me Too stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question that culturally that needs to change. I think it is slowly, it has been slowly changing. When we were doing it, we were sort of insulated from all that because we were, not only did we have each other, and there's this sort of inseparable bond, but sketch comedy was much more shambolic. There was less machismo, and it was just sort of, there were a lot of queer people and a lot of misfits and a lot of, there wasn't a lot of alpha posturing. Whereas in stand-up, you know, I remember going to see stand-up. When we were doing sketch comedy in Edinburgh, you'd go and see a stand-up, and they were all men, really, at the time. It was only really Joe Brand kind of flying the flag for female comedy and Jenny Eclair and people. And it would just be men mock shagging their girlfriends. So there'd just be lots of sort of jokes about sex, but then they would do lots of physical actions. And it was all just, in retrospect, sort of really horrific. And the mark of a good comic wasn't necessarily the quality of jokes, but how they could endure a bear pit atmosphere of heckling and nastiness. And I do think that's softened and changed. And, you know, I don't think, thankfully, I need to answer the argument that women aren't funny anymore when you see that they're winning all the awards and there's just the most extraordinary groundswell of female comedic talent in stand-up and beyond. But,
and
yeah.
How did you handle a bear pit situation of stand-up?
I didn't really do stand-up. That's the thing. And I'm not a good stand-up and I find it very uncomfortable. And I find it lonely. You know, I just sort of think, why would I choose a job that's lonely when I could tosh about with you or tosh about with Mel? Or, you know, all my life's been about sort of partnerships and collaborations and playing, really. And I don't find it playful. I think if an audience wants to play with you, that's great. But if an audience has come to rip you, then they'll win because I'm vulnerable, you know, and I wear my vulnerability, I think, slightly, thankfully, actually, more lightly these days than I used to. I think I used to sort of try and appear very tough, and, you know, but everything gets through. All of it gets through. I'm very susceptible. I'm susceptible to, you know, if I, it's rare that somebody's horrible to me online, but I won't lie, if they are, it can stay with me for weeks. I mean, it can just stick. Occasionally someone would say, when did you get fat? And that would be like, It will feel like a childhood thing, even though it isn't, because I was tiny as a child and no one would ever accuse me of being large. But it feels like that base kind of insult that you would receive, one that has no, there's no adverbs, there's no, you know what I mean? There's no glossing of the language. It's something that's very direct. And that will just sit with me. Or, but yeah, I can't remember why we started talking about
Twitter. Starting in comedy and
the Me Too stuff. Yeah, I mean, I'm no doubt that comedy clubs are still very challenging atmospheres. I think there's a sort of, you know, we talk about, and thankfully are now acknowledging, sort of systemic racism in organisations and power structures. I think, you know, equally there's some structural misogyny in certain branches of comedy. But what I do see is people very willing to change them. And, you know, I male comics wanting to contribute to that change. So, I mean, I do actually feel it's positive. And what's less positive, of course, is that COVID has shut down venues and destroyed and cut off sort of people's, you know, livelihoods. And they just got completely missed out. I don't know what you felt about the sort of, the whole Oliver Dowden sort of last minute attempts to save the arts. But, you know, there's so many people who've just got lost in the cracks. And it pains me because a lot of them do the sort of jobs that I used to do and still might do. And our whole kind of live comedy scene has been destroyed, clubs closing every day. And it just makes me very, very, very sad because it's a form of righteous indignation and expression that we should kind of keep alive in these times, I think. Yeah.
Well, the idea that the virus is something which particularly is spread by laughing, that laughing's bad. So you can have a really bad gig and that'll be okay. But, you know,
COVID would be spread at one of my gigs. That is in COVID-free zone.
Your next, speaking of things that come out when you laugh, is KP Skips.
Yeah, KP Skips, they remind me of dressing rooms. They remind me of light and melty prawn cocktail.
While you eat a skip and see how light and melty it is, I'm just going to boil the kettle for your next healthy snack.
I know, people are going to be appalled at my choices.
There's going to be the sound of a kettle boiling and people will think that it's one of Ben's rubbish.
Skips, light and melty as they are, and you know they are, remind me of the dressing room for light lunch.
Well, Claudia Winkleman went for these Skippy Skips as well.
Did she?
She did. And I tell you what, look, they aren't there. The skips are delicious. I know that we're going to get to the next snack, and that's going to relate to your foreign travels.
Yeah.
while the kettle's boiling, tell us about Bake Off. Because there was the late lunch phase, there was all that, was that part of your career. Then you did Supersizers, and then I was all getting all excited about Series 4, and then you were saying, no, well, I'm just doing this baking thing.
They cancelled us because we were rude about the royal family.
It is true, we were cancelled for being Republicans. What an irony. I just remember, moving swiftly along now through your snacks and through your life. I remember we were filming, I think, the Good Life. It was the soi-disant third series of Supersizers. And you were going off to film and saying, oh, it's just this baking competition. I don't know if it'll work. I don't know if it'll really... don't really fancy it. And I never knew with you because you never liked to boast or anything, or you didn't want to... I think you didn't want to make me feel you were leaving me or anything. You just think, I'm just going to go and do this baking show.
I never leave you.
Nah.
I just sort of didn't think... It felt like, albeit a very well-formatted show, you know, it's a solid, solid format. But I just had no concept of what it was, because, you know, you look at it on a piece of paper and you think, yeah, I get it, you know, and it's you know, they're very keen for me to do it. And at the time I was being really sort of mentored by a woman called Janice at the BBC, and she's solid and super smart. And I thought, well, if she thinks it's a good idea, then probably I should. And also, I'd never have, for someone who spends their life showing off, I'm not blessed with huge reserves of confidence, and I do tend to defer to other people. So I was like, okay, I'll do it. And
at the time it was very original. So subsequently, everything's modelled on Bake Off.
The Great British, you know, yeah.
It's the Great British exactly. thing. But the Great British Bake Off, this was a new name. This was Mary Berry, was someone who you'd met on Supersizers.
Exactly that. And suggested, you know, so it was... What was difficult about it is, as is well recorded, you know, we started and actually it was a lot more hard-edged. It was it felt like X Factor with Gatto. And... It was a travelling sort of show, the first series, and we spent the first week in Kingham, in the Cotswolds, and four people cried, and one person was crying about their dead dad, and I just was mortified. I was absolutely mortified that someone would have been taken to that level of upset by a question. And that's basically, that's what happening, is they'd been prompted, why are you making this, why are you doing it, why are you upset about it? And I suppose because my dad was ill at the time, and my dad didn't pass away till a bit later, but I was just very, very aware of that kind of triggering, and I didn't like it. And I just sort of said, you know what, if it's going to be like this, and I'm just going to stand around watching men and women in tears, it's not something I want to be involved with. So Mel and I sort of resigned very early doors, which I think is, again, is public knowledge.
After series one?
No, after day one. We just sort of went, no thanks, it's a bit hardcore for us and it's not very nice. And we all sort of had lots of meetings and to be fair to everyone involved, I think, you know, when you start a new project, the tone isn't always the thing that you think about. You think about the format points, you think about the cast, i.e. the bakers, and you think about the crew and crewing up and making sure that everyone's proficient. You don't really think about what kind of emotional pH it's going to have. And I guess that's what we provided. We didn't do, I mean, most of our jokes were cut. But we just were kind of decent and wanted people to have a nice time. Because I do think it's perfectly possible to make a really good lemon drizzle without having to be taken to an emotional breakdown about your ill partner or dead father.
So your humour, which was very... was basically to relax the contestants, create that sort of children's tea party atmosphere.
Exactly that. I mean, we are. I mean, I take no umbrage at that reference because we are like big adult babies. So it's just silliness, you know, and kids watched it, you know. So it's just like a little bit of picture postcard smuttiness with quite a lot of silly punnage and a lot of sort of broad physical chasing each other around. So that actually it's a show that everyone can sit down to. I remember being really struck. I was in a lift with this woman who just said, I want to thank you because she was from Peckham. She said, my son's starting to get involved with gang stuff, but the only night of the week I know where he is Bake Off night because he watches it with me. And I just thought, that's a victory, you know? For a mum to say, one night of the week, my teenage son, who I'm worried about, is by my side. I felt really moved by that because... I don't know, I remember watching telly with my family, and you were as well, because I think you did together. And that sort of, over time, is just no longer happens. I imagine your kids will be on tablets or dotted across around the house, doing their own thing on their phone, whatever. But that was something that drew people together, and it was just, over time, a really special... I don't think I realised how special it was until it stopped, actually. And then I sort of mourned it for a couple of years. Deep mourned
it. Did you?
It.
So did you?
Oh,
regret,
deep. I didn't regret it. Didn't regret what we did. It was absolutely the right thing to do. It was untenable, actually, the way that the whole thing unrolled. Particularly philosophical about it now. We left at the right time. You know, and we had that. In many ways, I think the peak experience, which was the Nadia thing, which was sort of 15 million people watching a sort of second generation Bangladeshi Muslim overcome her anxiety and her personal struggles and her almost a sort of ontological crisis about being a mum, but also wanting to be a self-made person, you know, and a career person. You watched all those things come to fruition and be beloved. And she's an exceptional person. Mm. She really is. Exceptional woman and mother and career woman and foodie. And she just emanates light and goodness. And it felt special when she won. And Mary cried. And then when Mary cried, I cried. I can't bear to see Mary. I mean, when Mary cries, I just, something genetically alters in me. And so I spent the whole of that final trying to announce who'd won while sort of thinking I'm going to retch. I feel so, like, I'm going to explode into tears at any moment. It was just wonderful. It was very special.
And yet it was such a huge part of your life. And
yeah, it really was.
And yet you haven't put a cake on your list of things. But then you said famously that you don't eat much cake. But
I did on that. Yeah. No, I haven't. I've put, for that period of time, homemade vegetable soup. Because that's what we'd eat. We'd go mad. I'd wake up and, you know, sort of run something through my hair and have somebody paint some makeup on me and put my silly blazer, usually quite stained blazer on, or march in and do some silly jokes. And then I would eat nonsense from 8 in the morning until 1, until lunchtime. I'd eat marron glacé and then a couple of meringues and then a fistful of sort of candied sort of fruit. And it just on and on and on. And then at 1 o'clock we'd sit down. And they'd ask us what we'd like for lunch. And Mary would say, just some vegetable soup, please. And Mary is, I don't know how old she is, and I wouldn't ask that she does, but she's an incredible fettle.
We've had the chocolate roll, we've had the Viscount biscuits, the white bread under the grill with sugar and cinnamon, crumpets, the skips, the homemade vegetable soup, that's 6.
We're going now too. Probably abroad.
We're going abroad. I've only got one more thing.
Oh, we'll find another.
Well, we might have to find another one. But you see, you suggested some packet noodles.
Yeah.
Which I feel may take us to the Sioux after Bake Off is Travel Sioux.
I mean, we might think that that's the packet noodles, bearing in mind what I've made us eat today is something from childhood. But I never ate packet.
These?
Perfect.
Bachelor's Super Noodles.
Yeah. The first time we went travelling was to the Mekong, and it was, we did hit some incredibly remote spots where things weren't safe or sanitary. And I was not a good traveller. I was squeamish and scared and there was insects and animals and cruelty and sadness everywhere. And because I'm incredibly porous, as discussed, I would find it all very, very difficult and upsetting. So I remember being in Vietnam, in a really rural part of Vietnam, and they were trying to explain that the morning pho, I didn't want meat. And I was staying in a little hut which had a gap under the door. And that morning I heard chickens squawking and then a thud and then this sort of lake of blood went under the door and that was breakfast. So they had chicken pho, but I started eating my soup and at the bottom she'd put a chicken's foot. And then there was this sort of, the fixer was going, no, she doesn't eat meat. And she went, but that's not meat, that's flavouring. And it's like their version of a stock cube is they'll just pop a chicken's foot in. So I thought, right, I need to find a way of being able to eat. So we bought a little kettle, almost like a drum kettle, and a load of super noodles. And every night I would go to the market. I'd get loads of Morning Glory, which is like, I don't even know what that is, a sort of load of sort of thin spinach, garlic, ginger, all sorts of stuff, some tofu. I'd boil my water up and I'd pop my sort of aromats in with some egg noodles, some dried egg noodles. And then at the last minute I'd put, maybe smash up some lemongrass, whatever I could get. Then I put my tofu and all my greens in, let that steam for a minute. And that was dinner. And that's what I had. And I'd always take a little thing of soy sauce with me.
So maybe this is too unhealthy.
It's not going to evoke the magnificent aromatic flavours of Vietnam, but at least it's shown what you can do.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's all here for the story. I'm sort of... I quite want to put the packet of flavouring in.
Go on, put the packet of flavouring in here. Let's do it. There's no real chicken in there, so I'm going
to
eat it.
You know, I don't think you'll be able to get a chicken. It's a sachet. This is the kind of thing, at best, I might expect to be handed this to wash my fingers in a sort of Californian crab shack.
I love the fact that everyone says, I'll just bring you down. I bring down your sort of, you know...
Oh, my God.
What is this horror? Well, that's what most of us eat. How long does it need?
To decompose on its own without us being
That's never decomposing.
Add flavour sachet, reduce heat and simmer for 4 minutes or until water is absorbed. Oh, the water meant to be absorbed.
Oh, God. There's a real theme building.
I mean, too much water.
For a food critic who can't cook a crumpet, burns cinnamon, has never seen a pot noodle, and leaves the gas on. I mean, I am now getting that gas vibe. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sorry.
The gas has been on for like 15 minutes with no ignition.
I think they've put in a bit of powdered parsley to try.
Oh, yeah. We're not Philistines.
I may have put too much water, so what's happened is that we've got a kind of soup. It's not as... Maybe too much liquid.
Yes, but that's all right.
We can dunk some of your uneaten burnt cinnamon paste.
Yeah, I mean, that is an absolute crime against my past. Crime against memory.
I don't know what's happened there. Is it too much liquid?
It's all liquid. Right, you just need to get into the glory of this.
No, but I'm just sort of...
And you know what? I'm quite proud of the culinary magic I wrought. And I really recommend that. You go to any market in Southeast Asia and they do these little soup kettles. Just
delicious.
Pick one up.
It's delicious. I've got a feeling if I... There's quite a lot of sugar in it.
Well, there you
That's
go.
That's weird.
Really?
Well, just a sort of sugary back note in all the flavourings. There's certainly no chicken. So although it says chicken flavour, there's no question.
Well, that's why they said flavour, because it absolutely gets them off the hook. What I love is it's turned the noodles a very disconcerting shade of yellow in very brief amount of time.
Water, wheat flour with added calcium, iron, niacin, thiamine, like in syrup. Palm oil.
Boing. No.
Flavouring, onion, garlic, potassium chloride, yeast extract, maltodextrin, ground
potassium
turmeric.
Potassium chloride of flavouring?
It's a poison.
Can I have a bit more potassium chloride in that, mate?
If you wanted to make these from scratch, going around Sainsbury's asking the blokes where's the potassium chloride, yeast extract, maltodextrin, ground turmeric, I think the first identifiable food.
Yes.
And that
plutonium.
Would be, to be fair, that's acid, malic acid, parsley, and black... Is that you burning your mouth on the...
You're laughing, you're saying acid.
Yeah, it just says acid.
Acid.
It's literally just acid. Acid, parsley, black pepper extract. So there is no chicken.
Gastro reflux that I've just experienced.
Can I just say there is no? So you're not busting out of
no,
your.
No. I knew that I was still on very solid ground as a vegetarian eating this.
Well, on that note, I think despite the fact that you've only managed to,
are we going to try? Are we doing seven?
Seven. I'm sure there was an eighth in there.
What I love is eating. You go to a country and you think the food is about one thing, and then you get something completely different. The best Japanese food I've ever had in my entire life, and I've eaten a lot of Japanese food in Japan. In fact, the best Japanese food I ate was actually in Kyoto. The second, was in Colombia. And this fantastic Japanese chef that had met a Colombian girl and set up an amazing restaurant there. And I just sat in the middle of Bogota with corona. So I was really wheezy while I was being told that it was altitude sickness and I wasn't to worry about anything. And had the most delicious truffled mushroom dumplings that you could ever, ever imagine. And then the day after that, I lost my sense of taste as part of the virus.
Perfect.
And I always, and it came back, for which I'm entirely grateful. But I just thought, if it hadn't, very glad it did, what a way to go out.
If you had to choose one of these as your desert island, the only thing you could have on your desert island, I'm you're looking at my burnt cinnamon toast and I'm really hoping.
My mother is just furious. All right. Crumpets, always crumpets. Because as I say, in moments of sadness, perfect little aerated rings of pure childhood memory and joy.
Yeah. Oh. Well, they were delicious. They were the best thing probably about our meal.
With a low bar that was set. A very low bar.
And a very metaphorical use of the word meal. Sue Perkins, thank you very much for letting me share your desert island crisps.
I'm sorry, they were inedible.
You've been listening to a special edition of Giles Corran Has No Idea, Desert Island Crisps. This is a Wireless Studios production produced by Ben Mitchell. And don't forget, you can listen to the podcast on the Times Radio app, and you can also subscribe to us wherever else you get your podcast. Esther and I will be back next week, and you can tune in for the live experience on My Times Radio Show every Friday from 1 till 4.
Imperfect with Rachel Sylvester and Alice Thompson, a weekly series of in-depth interviews with high-profile figures examining how overcoming the challenges of their early lives shaped the people they've become. This week, award-winning actor, playwright and director Kwame Kwe-Amar describes his childhood growing up in the Southall riots, changing his name after tracing his ancestry back to Ghana and becoming the artistic director of the Young Vic Theatre.
I'm seeing what I would call postmodern blackness all around me in terms of art. People who are just creating because they need to create, not creating to comment. Just the art itself will do the work for them.
Past Imperfect with Rachel Sylvester and Alice Thompson. Kwame Kwe-Amar, in his own words. Now available as a podcast. Listen on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times Radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh,
no,
so
how would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times Radio app.